Oh boy, it is Thursday, January 25th, 2024, 1 o'clock, 1300 for you military types. I'm Chase Cunningham, Dr. Cunningham, if you want to be formal. Dr. Zero Trust is another thing. Anyway, this is the Dr. Zero Trust show, and I can call it that now, so that's what I'm calling it. I want to get moving because wow, what a week. I don't know if like a lot of these vendors actually give a damn about the money that they spend on analyst firms. I've been an analyst for a while, and I have yet to see somebody take such a big giant swing and wind up just as far off the mark as for credibility as you could possibly be. Let's talk about this whole Zscaler thingy. Zscaler news and announcements. This was press release. I mean, bold going on a press release. So I'll try not to laugh, but I probably can't. Zscaler introduces industry's first zero trust SASE built on zero trust AI. All right. Zscaler SASE solution built with zero trust SD-WAN eliminates security risk and complexity of traditional SD-WAN. So I would applaud the work that went into coming up with probably what may be the single best SEO slur of marketing bullshit that I've ever read. I don't even know. I literally didn't know it was possible to get this many keywords into a thing, into a headline or a title. So for whatever that's worth, like congrats. But let's read a little further into some of this. So the leader in cloud security announced Zscaler, Zero Trust, Zscaler SASE, an industry first single vendor SASE solution built utilizing Zscaler Zero Trust AI to help organizations reduce cost and complexity while implementing zero trust across users, devices, and workloads. Additionally, Zscaler announced general availability for its zero trust SD-WAN solution and portfolio of plug-and-play appliances to help customers modernize secure connectivity for branch offices, factories, and data centers, while also eliminating the need for ineffective firewalls and VPNs. The new Zscaler solution is built on a zero trust architecture where business policies determine user and device access. There's a whole bunch more stuff in here, but like, I mean, let's take one step back. Okay, so Zscaler people, if you haven't noticed, there's kind of two camps here. There's zero trust and then there's SASE. I actually published something very recently that was an academic research approach to defining the difference between those two things. They're not the same. They shouldn't be shoehorned in together, and to have it as a thing with AI is sprinkling fairy dust on something and then making it a thing. If I put my analyst hat back on, I've been in rooms where people were doing advisories and they come up with this type of marketing thing. And if you're the analyst and you care about your client, you tell them, don't do this, because holy shit. I'm just gonna leave it there because it is what it is. But anyway, if you're looking for zero trust, SASE, WAN, AI powered, blah, 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 go to Zscaler and go download the solutions brief now because well done. Super awesome. Forescout actually put out some good research here. And I'll always throw the links in here, but this is the 2023 threat roundup, which is great because this is the roundup from last year. So 420 million attacks from January to December, 13 attacks per second, 300 million exploits, 50,000 unique malware samples. Now that number is always subject to interpretation because if I write a piece of code that's malicious in nature and I change one thing, it's a new malware sample. Top 10 countries originating attacks: the US, China, Russia, Netherlands, Germany, Estonia, Bulgaria, UK, Vietnam, Singapore. 212 countries originate attacks. 10 countries accounted for 77% of all malicious, and lots of stuff coming out of China. Shocker. More compromised devices: 48% of attacks from IPs that were managed by ISPs were noted, 32% from organizations in business, government, and other sectors, and 10% from cloud and hosting providers. This reflects an increase in the use of compromised devices to launch attacks, whether directly or tied to residential proxies. Attacked services, focusing on the web and IoT. Top attacked service types, web, remote management. There you go. That's basically it. If you're going to do anything, those are the two large ones, web and remote management. Exploits. There's a lot beyond KEV. Exploits against software libraries decreased partly because of the Log4j is no longer as popular as it was. Exploiting against network infrastructure and IoT devices increased. The most targeted IoT devices were IP cameras, including automation and network attached storage. Only 35% of exploited vulnerabilities appeared in the CISA KEV. You don't have to defend everything all the time. If you prioritize everything, you prioritize nothing. OT protocol, Modbus, Ethernet IP, Step 7, and DNP3. So if you're in OT, IoT infrastructure, Modbus. Distribution of the top 10 commands. What is everybody after? Persistence. That's what they want. File execution, file system interaction, and then basically taking files. So there you go. Lastly here, distribution of malware types. Remote access Trojan, number one. Info Stealer, number two. Botnet, number three. CryptoMiner, a distant fifth. So there you go. Like, if you're looking for the things to prioritize, go look for the roundup from last year. If you have all this research and evidence, and obviously it's vendor stuff, so take a little bit of a grain of salt, but it gives you a good idea of what you can focus and vector in on. Again, not everything is defensible. Not everything needs to be defended. If you cannot prioritize, you're not doing it right. That's it. Contested space is a thing. Prioritize based on the attack likelihood and the success that will result from that. That's pretty much where it goes. HP Enterprise discloses hack by suspected. I always love when that shows up. State-backed Russian hackers. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise disclosed Wednesday their 8K filings out there, which I have that as well, that suspected state-backed Russian hackers broke into its cloud-based email system and stole data from cybersecurity and other employees. That's kind of weird wording. The provider of information technology products and services said in their 8K filing that it was informed of the intrusion on January 12th. Today's the 25th. Okay. It said the hackers were from Cozy Bear, a unit of Russia's SVR Foreign Intelligence Service. Microsoft reported last week that it also discovered an intrusion of its corporate network on January 12th. Same day, same group. The Redmond, Washington tech giant said the breach began in late November, also from Cozy Bear. It said Russian hackers accessed accounts of senior Microsoft executives as well as cybersecurity and legal employees. Cozy Bear was also behind the SolarWinds breach and focuses on stealth and intelligence gathering. Really interesting stuff. Based on our investigation, we now believe that the threat actor accessed and exfiltrated data beginning in May 2023 from a, quote, small percentage of HP email boxes belonging to individuals in our cybersecurity go-to-market business segments and other functions. Now, from a national security perspective or from a intellectual property perspective, why would that occur? Well, it's when you go small, you're doing it because you're being targeted and you're going after stuff that's specifically valuable. This is not a spray and pray type of thing. So normally, here's a bit of a twist on this narrative. Normally, you see the Chinese groups being much more targeted and going more, I would say, scalpel, not so much chainsaw. This time, you're seeing the Russians do it. Yeah. Company spokesman Adam Bauer, reached by email, would not say who informed HPE of the breach, probably the government, somebody. We're not sharing our information this time. Bauer said the compromised email boxes were running Microsoft software. So there you go. In the filing, HPE said the intrusion was likely related to earlier activity by this threat actor, of which we were notified in June 2023, involving unauthorized access to exfiltration of a limited number of SharePoint files. Yeah. So there you go. I mean, does anyone here, like, it's not even to beat these companies up. Like, everybody can get breached. Everybody can get hacked. Do you don't think that HPE is spending shitloads of money a year on cybersecurity? You don't think everybody there has had that awful phishing training 7,000 times over? But really, where you're at is that this is just the reality. Consider everyone breached until proven otherwise. And then guess what? Consider them breached again and deal with that reality. Like, that's what's up. They're going to find some avenue of entry or exploit. Can you isolate it? Can you limit it? Can you keep them from staying? All those things, like, that becomes much more valuable and much more important, I would suggest. You can't defend everything all the time, especially for large enterprises. And again, this obviously continues to prove that it is not a conversation about budget or resources or training or any other stuff that we're shoved down our throats constantly. If you're out there and you're digital, you can be breached and compromised. If you're, unless you want to go live in a hut down by the river and cover your front door with rocks and never be online, you can be compromised. That's just the reality of the space in which we operate. It is, it will be, it continues to be that. Does that mean give up? Fuck no, it doesn't mean give up. But does it mean deal with that reality? Yes. And plan accordingly? Yes. And if you're not, you are setting yourself up for failure. It's just that simple. It is. I've been to Microsoft's corporate office. I've talked with Microsoft's leadership. I won't say who, but I've talked with them. They're doing as good as they possibly can. That is a giant, giant infrastructure to take care of. The odds of you being 1,000% perfect all the time are zero. But you got hit. So, okay, move on. Now that brings me to this next thing about this whole mega breach deal. That shouldn't have been marketed the way that it was marketed. Go look at what's actually in that mega breach, the MOAB, the mother of all breaches, which is actually kind of funny. Because if you're not familiar, in the military, we have a thing called the mother of all bombs, MOAB. And we actually have a thing called the GOAB, which is the god of all bombs. So I'm wondering if there's a next thing here, which is the GOAB, the god of all breaches. Blech. But I mean, it's all stuff that's already been breached. It was just put into like a collated database. Big deal. It was, you know, 24 billion records. Yeah, there's only 8 billion people on the planet, roughly. So again, everyone is breached until proven otherwise, and then proven again. But it wasn't the giant fucking thing that was put out there. So this is like FUD peddling to the highest level. I mean, we've seen that a lot this week recently. I don't know why now in 2024, 2023, we're starting to get past like FUD to some degree. Now it seems like we're rolling back into it. Maybe marketing has run out of ideas or something. I don't know. But that whole thing is not the end of the world, folks. All that shit had already been breached. Think about how many times you've been notified that your social security and your password and your blah and your this and your that were already breached. All of that stuff's already out there. It's already been taken. I was in the OMB breach. Still sitting here right now. So is what it is. This was an interesting article too. Cyber Threat Landscape, 7 Key Findings, from Axer, AXUR. Again, you got to take all these data and kind of, you know, make your own decisions about it, but there's interesting numbers in here. A threefold increase in leaked credit cards. A report from last year indicates that a staggering 13.5 million credit card and debit card details were leaked, tripling the number from the previous year. So that's not good. United States tops the list, accounting for nearly half of all the detected credit card leaks. The surge here reflects the intensified activities on deep and dark web channels. Spotlight on credential leaks and info stealers. Credential leaks, although stable at 4.2 billion, have witnessed a shift with a surge in paste and major leaks of sources, because people do that shit. Notably, 15% of these exposed credentials can be considered corporate. That's not good. Highlighting the urgency of robust corporate cybersecurity measures. Or here's an idea. What if we didn't do the password friggin' shuffle anymore and we moved away from passwords and we did other ways of authentication? Shocker. Like, what would the world look like when we didn't give away the easy access? Distinctively, credential stealer malware poses a significant threat by obtaining 98% of credentials in plain text, bypassing encryption hurdles. The stolen passwords are meticulously cataloged in log files, providing cyber criminals with insights into acquisition methods. Furthermore, credential stealers capture authorization tokens and cookies, potentially compromising MFA. Can MFA be compromised? Yes. Is MFA better than nothing? Yes. Should you turn MFA on? Yes. Should you rely on your passwords? No. Like, just be real about this stuff and think. Like, just take a friggin' minute and think. we have decades of research. We have all these thought leaders, things that are being published about it, whatever else. And what's the answer? If you're living in a neighborhood and every house in your neighborhood, the front door gets busted into and they all have the same locks and you have the same lock on your front door, what should you do? I don't know. Go get a different lock. Put an ADT sign out front. Get a fucking Doberman. Like, do anything differently than everyone else that's getting pwned, and you can expect some sort of different outcome. If passwords are the thing and we have volumes of proof and phishing is the thing and volumes of proof, do something different. Like, there you go. Be a slightly harder target. Brand misuse and digital fraud panorama. Unconventional use of brand impersonations such as social media profiles, apps, and paid advertisements led to 200,680 detections. Detections of what? I'm not sure, but whatever. New fraud, evolving tactics. Threat actors now possess the capability to establish complete e-commerce stores within a matter of minutes, leveraging popular platforms. Everybody's kind of familiar with this. Furthermore, the rise of app phishing scams has taken center stage, showcasing the increased sophistication of contemporary cyber fraud. You know, sure. Behind the disruption metrics, takedown and uptime. There's a bunch of stuff in here about how fast stuff goes up and down and whatever else. Look at it for yourself. But it's kind of interesting to see how fast these things progress and change. The analysis of 133 million messages and posts on the dark web provided insights into the tactics and procedures of malicious agents, playing a crucial role in preventing cyber threats. This monitoring extends to messaging apps such as Telegram, WhatsApp, and Discord, as well as other web forums. There are more than 529,965 incidents unmonitored deep in dark web sources focusing on retail. So, yeah, notably of those, 374,592 incidents resulted from text detections. So this is where they start. Like I said, when you read vendor reports, know that there's going to be a little bit of a spin towards that somewhere or whatever else. But go read this report for yourself. Make your own decisions. Miracle Leak exposes 11 million corporate messages. This is on Cyber News. Miracle Software Systems left an unprotected instance exposing millions of messages between thousands of corporate users, some of which discuss corporate secrets. Even though official documents are extremely sensitive, corporate chat histories can be just as revealing, especially when millions of messages are involved. Meanwhile, a Cyber News research team has recently discovered an open MongoDB instance with over 11 million Rocket Chat messages between 3,062 users. Rocket.chat is an open source platform that uses MongoDB as the default storage database, sometimes leading to data exposing misconfiguration accidents. If you're not familiar with this, go look up don't go look up and don't say that I told you. I'm just saying, in theory, you could go look up how to do some Google dorks and use Shodan and some other things, Shadow Server and whatever, to look around. You'll be shocked at how much MongoDB stuff is out there that is misconfigured. Based on our analysis, this is the Cyber News folks, the entire Miracle software infrastructure and potentially the assets of their clients were compromised. According to the team, the exposed database contained 2 gigs of text messages, essentially everything that employees and customers discuss via Rocket.chat. Our research had believed that MongoDB instance was open for at least 3 days in the junction between November and December, but it is no longer publicly available. Since there's a multitude of parties, vast amount of credentials shared. I mean, just think about what you share or you do with people on your Slack, or I've never used Rocket Chat before, but it's a chat thing. Think about how much stuff you share in there. Don't people paste creds? Don't people paste links? Don't people paste all kinds of stuff in there? If that's leaked, that's a really bad day. And again, I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying you could. Go do a little bit of tickling the electrons and see how many Mongo databases or other database backends are out there that are woefully misconfigured. And it's a hard thing to get all that stuff right, to be fair to the folks that are doing the work on the front end. It's easy to leave something on the back door side open, but if you do, someone will find it. I mean, there's people with nothing else to do but to go after those. So, yeah. This was super interesting for me. Japanese writer wins award, reveals she used ChatGPT. The latest recipient of a prestigious literary prize in Japan has revealed that part of her novel was entirely written with the help of AI, specifically ChatGPT. Rikudan, I think, a 33-year-old writer, won the Akutagawa Prize last week with her novel Tokyo To Dojo To, Tokyo Sympathy Towers, what that translates to. The novel is about an architect in the capital of Japan and is billed as a narrative that exposes the prophecy of the AI generation. However, Kudan soon revealed that she had a unique ghostwriting helper. In her acceptance speech, she stated, "This is a novel written by making full use of generative AI like ChatGPT, and probably about 5% of the whole text is written directly from generative AI. I would like to work with them to thank them for helping my creativity." Kudan is unfussed. As per CNN, she's planning to continue her collaboration with ChatGPT. She is quoted as saying, "I plan to continue to profit from the use of AI in the writing of my novels while letting my creativity express itself to the fullest." So, I mean, there's a question. Like, I'm an author. I write books that nobody reads. Is it wrong to use a LLM like ChatGPT to kind of help you get over writer's block? I don't know that that's wrong. If you've ever written like an actual book or a thesis or whatever else, and you've never run into the space of like your writer's block and your brain just kind of hits the wall, it could be very helpful, I would think, to use a system like that to say, "Here's what I'm trying to say. Can you help me give another perspective?" Because 1,000%, like when I was working on my last book and I hit the wall, I went and asked other people, like, "How would I phrase this?" And usually that's enough to kind of get you over the hump and you start the motor cranking again and you can go off and finish writing. Is it wrong to use an LLM that could do the same sort of thing? I don't know. Is it not creative? Well, you still have to put the prompt in there and hopefully you still take some of whatever is vomited back at you and do some editing and, you know, whatever. This one for me as an author is kind of confusing. And I mean, you could also say, well, if you're writing a book, you should never use Grammarly, because I use Grammarly all the time because my grammar is not great and I'm a product of the Texas education system. Hey, you know, knock it. But I mean, I use Grammarly all the time because Grammarly makes your writing clean. So, and I will admit right now, when I wrote my last book, before I submitted it to my editor, I ran every chapter through Grammarly. And oftentimes it would find stuff that I had missed or that my editor had missed. It's better than humans in most cases. Does that mean that I didn't really edit my book? Well, no, it still went through me and it still went through the editor. But sometimes the software is better than people. This one's a sticky thing. Sticky overall. There's other implications here, but just at the basic level, if you're using an LLM, ChatGPT or whatever, to help you in your writing, is that wrong? Is that, it's not plagiarism because it didn't exist before you created it, but you didn't write it. I don't know. Tell me what you think when you respond to this or whatever, but I don't know. I don't know that there's a correct answer, to be perfectly honest here. It's a double-edged sword. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Equiland has also been hit by a cyber attack. The Lockbit ransomware game claimed credit for an attack against major securities lending platform, Equiland, a Bloomberg reports. The company said in a statement yesterday some of the systems were taken offline. Mm-hmm. Ukrainian's critical infrastructure companies targeted by disruptive attacks. Four Ukrainian state-owned critical infrastructure companies were hit by disruptive cyber attacks this week. The Record reports, which again, they publish great stuff. Go read it. The attacks targeted Ukraine's largest state-owned oil and gas company, Naftogaz. The country's national post service provider, Irkpashta, Transport Safety Organization, DSBT, and the Ukraine State Railway, I am not even going to try and pronounce that word, Ukrzalnytsia, I guess. It's unclear who's responsible for the attacks. Russians, although a Russian hacktivist gang has claimed credit for the attack. So unclear, but they claimed credit. Unclear. Yeah. Symantec published a report looking at the ransomware threat landscape for 2024, noting that the main infection vector for ransom is now exploitation of known vulnerabilities in public-facing applications. The most popular vulnerability being targeted by ransomware actors is Citrix Bleed, CVE-2023-4966. Go see if that's on your systems and patch your shit. A session tokens leakage thing affecting Citrix's Netscaler ADC and the Netscaler gateway. The researchers also observed an increase in the abuse of legitimate tools and operating system features to stage the ransomware. Windows operating system components are the most widely used legitimate software, which is basically living off the land. Guess what? PSExec, PowerShell, WMI. So here's the thing, right? And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. If you are not doing development work, if you don't need PowerShell, isolate PowerShell, isolate PSExec, those types of things. And guess what? You are removing a low-hanging piece of fruit. It's one thing to get an infection on your machine. It's another if it can do stuff. And if you look at the ransomware, look at all the proof, all the history, all the research, it loves to invoke PowerShell. So guess what you could do? Use something that will isolate PowerShell from calling out and doing what it's not supposed to do. There's a whole lot of software out there that does this. I'll mention one, ThreatLocker. Like, you could go use ThreatLocker and ring fence that shit off and problem solved. I mean, the problems that we face here are not exceptionally crazy difficult, but really, if you're choosing to ignore the data and the facts that you face, bad things are probably going to happen to you. It just is what it is. Somebody in the comments here said, what about keychains as far as passwords and whatever else? Yeah, I mean, keychains are a thing. I've just been getting familiar with how that stuff is kind of doing stuff on the device and whatever. I think that there's better ways of moving around with authentication personally. But don't be using your passwords, and turn on 2FA and isolate PowerShell and like all these best practices that we know that's been published that you can read about. They're best practices for very good reason. Choosing to do otherwise is choosing to roll the dice. Rolling the dice in cyber is not the best strategy. I would say that that's pretty well proven. Anyway, it's been 27 or 28 minutes. Folks got other things to do. As always, stay smart, stay safe, stay secure. If I can help you, please reach out, and I will catch you on the next one. Disclaimer, the information in this podcast episode, aka episode, is provided for general information purposes only. By listening to this episode, you understand that this is not specific technical guidance from the host. No information contained in this episode should be construed as security advice from the author, host, or guest, nor is it intended to be a substitute for security advice on any particular subject matter. No listener of this episode should act or refrain from acting on the basis of any information included in or accessible through this episode without seeking the appropriate technical or other professional advice on the particular facts and circumstances that are discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only. All views expressed therein are those of the host and his guest and should not be considered as being endorsed by nor related to the host or the guest's employers.